Support for the Quite Unusual podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the ultimate hygiene bundle for the man in your life, the Performance Package.
Help him join over 8 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code QUITEUNUSUAL at manscaped.com. And if my math is correct, which I think it is, that's about 16 million clean-shaved balls. I mean, give or take a ball.
Look, guys, the truth is women don't like hairy balls.
Mm-mm.
I mean, we don't have balls, but if we did, I can promise they would be hairless.
Manscaped has everything you need to get your sweaty, hairy balls,
gross,
and bush under control and out of my face. It's not just for men, it's for everyone.
The Performance Package 4.0 by Manscaped has arrived, and to call us obsessed is an understatement.
We're obsessed. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold, well, I guess anything you want to travel with.
First, we have the Lawnmower 4.0. This trimmer is the future of grooming, and dare I say, the greatest trimmer ever.
You dare.
I used it, and my lawn has never been more manicured.
The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer, which we did take turns using.
We did.
It's waterproof, so it's super easy to clean between uses and provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs on our delicate, ladylike little noses. But it's still powerful enough to blast through that horrendous forest I know all of you men have growing inside your nostrils.
Ban your smelly balls with their Crop Preserver ball deodorant and Crop Reviver ball toner. It's like a skincare routine, but for your balls.
Manscaped even threw in two free gifts, the super soft Manscaped boxers, which are now my favorite PJs, and the Shed travel bag, which also doubles as a great makeup bag.
It's time to take care of the hairy people in your life. So go to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with code QUITEUNUSUAL.
That's right, 20% off and free shipping if you use the code QUITEUNUSUAL at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com if you use our code QUITEUNUSUAL.
Get those hairy balls and bush under control with
Manscaped.
Whoa, how did you do that?
I don't know. It just came out of me.
It was amazing.
Quite
unusual.
Hello, and welcome to the Quite Unusual podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Noelle.
And I'm Nicole.
And I have a tiny cat on my chair.
You do. She's perched.
She's perching like a little parrot.
She's definitely going to meow during this episode, so...
She will scream.
Warning to you all. That's the sound of her crawling down the chair right now.
I don't understand what's happening. This house is out of control.
This house is out of control.
Out of control. You know what else is out of control?
What?
This song that I wake up singing and cannot get out of my head.
Sing it to us so it'll get stuck in all of our heads right now.
I don't know if these are like all of the words to it though. Like that's the problem is that I have the song in my head, but like I'm not 100% sure on all the words. You know what I mean? Does it ever happen to you?
Yeah, I just make the words up then in that case.
Okay, so there's this video going around the internet of like Europop, and it's like a parody of it, and it's filmed like in the 9/11 like mall or whatever.
Oh, chill.
I think I showed it to you.
It's yes, like, you did.
And I'm obsessed. And there's like this part where this man starts rapping and he's like, women are my favorite guy. And I cannot stop saying women are my favorite guy. And also tell the world, stop the war.
Like, is that what they also say?
Yeah. He's like, women are my favorite guy. Sex. I'm wanting more. Tell the world, stop the war. And it just immediately reminded me of that Black Eyed Peas song that everyone was like, so true.
Where's the love?
Yeah. Like, so true. Like, if everyone just did this, then the world would be a better place. Like, thank you, Fergie.
Fergie.
She's Fergalicious. She's too busy.
She did that for us.
She's too busy.
Stop the war. Who knew Black Eyed Peas would have political songs?
Who knew? Who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah. Did you know that they are responsible for the Hummer craze?
The Hummer craze?
Remember when Hummers were like having a fucking moment in like the, was it like 2007, whatever? And that kid in our high school got one and everyone was like, whoa.
And then we were like, why do you hate penguins?
Yeah. they had like a brand deal where they were supposed to only be seen driving Hummers.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone thought they were cool because like Will.i.am was driving a Hummer.
Fergie had a Hummer.
Yeah. So they like almost single-handedly like made Hummers, I'm going to use air quotes here, cool?
Hmm.
Yeah. So sorry, that's my fact for the day.
Just like how the movie Idiocracy made Crocs cool.
Oh shit, yeah, totally.
We just found that out too.
Totally.
Nobody knew what the hell Crocs were until that movie. And then the reason why they used those shoes is because they were like, what's the dumbest shoe ever? And then it was Crocs. And then people started buying them.
Have you seen those non-flip-flop flip-flops that are out now?
No.
They're fucking egregious. It's like a rubber sole, and like you put your foot in it, and it like cradles your foot.
Okay.
But you're like, your foot just is sitting in this thing. It's
That's
like
insane.
It's like if Crocs were somehow worse.
I don't know how that's possible.
I know. And this is not an anti-croc podcast.
I'm sort of anti-croc.
I want so bad to have a pair of black platform goth crocs, but
I simply
will not spend $90 on a fucking rubber shoe. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, well.
I'm not doing it.
Take that up with the people of Idiocracy.
The good people at Crocland, USA.
People. Anywho.
Yeah, so this is now just a random fact podcast. If you guys came here to hear anything spooky, scary, you're in the wrong place.
I do have research prepared if we would like to talk about spooky, scary.
Is it just random facts or is it like a continuing story?
It's a continuing story. Hear me out.
Oh,
hear me
out. I'll hear you out.
It's a doozy, too. I'll start by saying this. This will be a two-parter because I don't know. I can't even tell you how long my research took for this because it just felt like it was never ending. I was I'm going to be done. It's going to be one part. It's actually two parts.
Just up in the attic late at night doing a little clicky-clacks.
I was clicky-clacking.
It was scary.
So this will be a two-parter. And the story we're talking about is the story of the Bell Witch.
Ooh.
Which if you're familiar with what's been happening in our lives, you know that I just visited the Bell Witch Cave.
It's true. She touched a spider.
I didn't touch a spider. There were a lot of spiders, though.
And they wanted to touch you.
I didn't want to touch them.
Well, you don't get choices sometimes.
But yeah, so that kind of, I guess, piqued my interest in doing this as a story. So, I don't know. Should we just jump into the story? It's going to be a long one. It's going to be a long one.
Hold on. Let me click. Buckled up. Ready to go. Let's do it.
Okay.
Did everyone, all the little dogs in the house go potty before?
Everyone, it seems like,
we started.
We're good. We're good to go. We're going to start. This is going to be a doozy, okay?
Here we go. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, go.
All right. So first, to get some background to the story, because, you know, we like to get some background when we do our stories.
We like a little background.
You know, we like the full scope of things, just like the highlights.
We've been known to have a beginning, middle, and an end to
our stories. Give the full amount of details that we can come across, at least. So first, I want to talk about the Bell family. Because if you haven't guessed by the name, they are the family this entire haunting revolves around. Our story takes place in an area called Red River, Tennessee, and it starts in 1817.
Great year.
The area is now called Adams, Tennessee. But back then, it was Red River Community.
Because it ran red with blood. No, I'm just kidding.
Red community's blood. The story has inspired many movies, books, and TV shows, and some even refer to it as America's greatest ghost story.
This is one of those stories that I feel like we've all definitely heard of, the Bell Witch, for sure. But like, I don't know that much about it, except that it's deep and thick with lore.
It is, yeah. And it actually is, I mean, it's considered America's greatest ghost story, but it's also like one of the first ghost stories that America really truly had that was like documented.
Yeah.
Because I mean, in the 1800s, not a lot of shit was documented.
Yes.
So with that being said, some of these things are just kind of like speculation or like what historians could like pick out of the things that they had, because like I said, record keeping wasn't really great back in the day.
No, and a lot of people were illiterate and, you know, just like didn't care to write things down.
Just like really dumb. Yeah. Really, really dumb.
Well, you know, they did the best they could with what they had.
That's true.
I do love when things or stories or whatever claim to be like the greatest of something or like the only of something.
Yeah.
It.
One of the only. And it's like, what's one of the, though?
Right.
Like, how many are you saying?
One of the only haunted houses in America. It's like, okay, well,
you can't make that.
Also, how do you judge that?
Yeah, you can't.
What's like the metric that we're
there
judging?
There are none. That's why people can say that, because there's no metric.
Like, I'm one of the only people to live in a haunted house full time.
Yeah.
Okay, settle down.
I mean, you could say that because it's you're not throwing out any numbers, so you're not wrong.
I'm one of 4 million people, but one of.
One of, yeah.
The only.
So when I went on the tour, they were selling a bunch of different books in the gift shop, and they were even selling a book written by Charles Bailey Bell, who was the great-grandson of John Bell.
It's a good name.
The name The Bell Witch can be confusing because the story doesn't really involve a witch. I would call it more so a paranormal like entity or like poltergeist type of like story. But at the time, ghosts weren't really like that big.
They weren't having a moment.
They weren't having a moment. And I don't even think the word poltergeist was invented, or if it wasn't, hadn't made its way to rural Tennessee. Because isn't it like German or something in origin?
Yeah, I'm going to say it probably just hadn't made it to rural Tennessee at that time.
So that wasn't like a term in people's minds. And the story took place roughly 125 years after the Salem witch trials. So at this time, anything that happened that was unexplainable or even just like bad luck was literally just chalked up to being the work of a witch or witchcraft. Because they didn't have any other reasoning. They were just like, oh, it must be a witch.
That makes sense. Like casting some sort of spell. Like,
well, anytime anything went bad, it wasn't like the crops didn't fail because you're a shitty farmer. The crops failed because there's a witch. Like that's what they basically just used as an excuse.
It was a witch. Also, I just looked it up and the word poltergeist was coined in the 17th century. So it was around, but
it was fresh. It was fresh.
Hot off the presses. Story.
There was still a widespread paranoia when it came to witchcraft because that was really the only explanation they had. People were stupid and, well, not stupid. I'll say ignorant.
Ignorant.
And the name the Bell Witch was given in the 1800s when the story happened, and it just sort of stuck ever since. And even on the tour, the guide referred to the entity as the witch. But if we're being specific here, it didn't involve a witch. I would classify it more as like a paranormal entity.
Maybe the real witch was the friendships they made along the way.
Sure, we'll go with that. Some people also get confused with this story and the story of the Blair Witch, which the two have nothing to do with each other. The director of the Blair Witch has even come out and stated so. And you'll find that, like, once we go through the story, it really doesn't have any similarities at all to the Blair Witch.
I understand, though, how people could assume that. Like, you know, it's called the Bell Witch. So I assume that there was some sort of witch involved or, like, at least an evil hag, you know?
Right. And the two bees, you know. But, yeah, it has nothing to do with the Blair Witch. The Blair Witch does not come from the story. They're completely two separate things. But anywho, before we get into the story of an entity that terrorized the family for 3 years, from 1817 to 1820, let's get some background on the Bell fam. So John Bell was born on February 15th, 1750, in Halifax County in North Carolina.
Aquarius. Love it. Love to see it.
He grew up in a farming family, as most people did, and he learned the skills and trade of agriculture from a very young age. John was known as a hard-working and respected member of the community, but also keep in mind that this story takes place in the 1800s, so it is completely shrouded in slavery.
Ugh, not great.
So, yeah, maybe John Bell was hardworking and a respected man in his community, but he was also a slave owner. In fact, everyone in this story pretty much owned slaves.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's the late 1700s in the South, especially.
Yeah, and the Civil War, I believe, happened in 1861.
Wait, didn't we just look this up?
I just looked it up yesterday, so that's from... It's further in this story, but... Yeah, by this time, everyone owned slaves. In 1782, John Bell married Lucy Williams. She was a daughter of a prominent farmer named John Williams of Edgecombe County, North Carolina. John Bell was 32, and Lucy was only 12 years old.
I'm going to fucking vomit.
Just to add more fucked up read to the story.
I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it. It's freaking me out. It's giving me the ick.
Yeah.
But this was at a time when, like, you sold your daughters because you're going to take care of them.
I was going to say, it's kind of messed up because, like,
gross.
Everyone had slaves and every adult man was just marrying a child.
Yeah.
So,
and, like, you were,
like
fully allowed to. Like, when was the Emancipation Proclamation? Like, in, like, the late 1800s, right?
Yeah, it's
like
gotta be
like the 1860s
after
or
Civil War.
Yeah, and like people still marry children, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, but they apparently didn't start having kids until she was 20.
Okay.
So maybe he knew it was super messed up to be marrying a 12-year-old, but maybe also they were trying and it just didn't happen because she was fucking 12.
Yeah, like, does she have her period yet?
No one knows.
Yeah.
No one knows.
Fucking crazy.
But remember, this is the 1800s. That's just a thing that people did. Men married literal children, and it was just like, okay.
I'm going to fucking vomit.
Yeah. The Bells purchased a farm in Edgecombe County and started accumulating wealth and power in the area. Together, the two of them had several children, 8 or 9 in some accounts, some say 7. Like I said, records were not great. Betsy and Richard Bell were the two most notable, though, as they played pivotal roles in the story of the Bellwitch haunting. Their children were named Jesse, John Jr., Drury,
okay,
Benjamin, Esther, Zadok, Elizabeth or Betsy,
mm-hmm,
Richard and Joel.
But you did put his middle name in here, so I do need to read it. It's Joel Egbert.
I was wondering why I did that for them and not the others. That's probably the information
probably
that was given.
Yeah,
but
it.
Benjamin Bell did die as a young child, so he had passed away.
That's sad. That was a ride. I bet it's a biblical name or something.
Totally.
Yeah.
Betsy, the youngest daughter, was a big target of the entity's malevolence. She endured physical assaults and psychological torment, which we're going to get all into that later. Richard, on the other hand, became a witness to the bizarre occurrences and actively participated in attempts to communicate with the Bellwitch. But more on that later.
Okay, so he's like fucking egging this shit on, and she's like, please stop.
John Bell owned a 320-acre farm where he grew cotton, corn, and tobacco. He also owned 9 people who were forced to help him maintain this farm. The family's first farm was located in North Carolina, and this farm didn't do so hot. Some may even say their family and their farm were cursed, because things always seem to go wrong for poor old John Bell.
I mean, not too poor old. He did own people and marry an infant.
It's true.
So.
Yeah.
It's hard to feel bad for this man.
There is that.
Aside from those things.
I mean, yeah.
Who knows?
They ran into instances where their crops just didn't come up, even while everyone else's in the community did. And nobody really knew why. Like I said, it was probably just because he was a shitty farmer, but they use the excuse of maybe we're cursed instead.
Yeah, right. It's one of those two things.
It's like, it's easy to blame on a curse. Their cows and their hogs contracted incurable diseases, and all of their mules died of colic.
Oh, that's so sad.
And some could say curse, but others could just say that he was a shitty farmer, yeah. Like I said.
Also, the disease that the cows and the hogs got,
mm-hmm.
They caught the showbiz bug, baby. They're off to Hollywood. They're going to make it big.
But the family then decided to start anew in Tennessee. So they packed everything up and they made the trek west to Tennessee. There's a rumor that the reason why they had to move from North Carolina to Tennessee was because John Bell may have murdered a man named John Black.
Okay.
And that the family was fleeing the area to get away, but like many things in this story, we're not sure if that's actually accurate. And apparently, this man was John Bell's slave overseer. And according to the story, he had a thing for John's oldest daughter, Mary. Some say John murdered him and buried him on the property, and that the ghost of John Black haunted them and caused their crops to fail, which then in turn forced them to move to Tennessee.
Okay, I can definitely see that being a thing. Like him murdering a man and burying him on his, well, he wouldn't bury him probably on his property, but he would have someone do it. And then just running away from that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that happened probably all of the time.
Oh, totally. Yeah. How are you going to prove that? You literally can't.
Prove what?
So, but like I said, there is no like actual information that says that. It's like speculation. It's rumor. So take that as you will. But you'll find that, like many things in the story, there's no evidence. And it was such a freaking long time ago that most of this story just comes from journals written from firsthand accounts. Because, like I mentioned, record keeping was not great.
Yeah, and you're not going to, like, go tell the newspaper, like, I just killed a guy. Make sure you publish that.
I mean, you might, like, write it in your journal, like, Dear Diary, today I killed John Black.
LOL.
It was fun. KK, love ya, bye.
Did you keep a diary when you were
TTYL? Of course I did. Who didn't keep a diary?
So I wanted to so bad, but like my ADHD just fucking didn't let me. So I'd enter, like, put in entries like once every like 6 months and be like, hey, sorry, I haven't talked to you in a while, diary.
Me again. I know. Isn't that, you like refer to it as like an entity like of its own?
Right. And like, who else would be writing in this? Obviously it's me again.
Long time no talk.
I'm the only one that has the tiny key to unlock it. Obviously it's going to be me.
One of my, our friends, her mom just found like, because she was an avid journal keeper, and her mom just found like boxes and boxes of her journals, and she like gave them to her. And I was like, let's just like open a bottle of wine, sit there with your journals and just like read through them. And she's like, fuck no.
Oh my God. Let's make a play.
That's what I said. I was like, we could make like literally like a TV show out of your journals. Probably.
That would be amazing. I bet they're so good too.
Yeah. And she was like, they're probably so stupid. It's probably just like, today Nicole was being a bitch. I hate her. Bye. Because I was a kind of a bitch when I was younger. So
yeah, only when you were younger.
Only when I was younger, though. So while on their journey west to Tennessee, the family encountered another classic American paranormal phenomenon, the Brown Mountain Lights.
Oh, we talked about that in something.
We talked about the Paulding Lights.
Oh, okay.
Which, I mean, these are very similar too. And this was known. I mean, we knew that they had encountered these because John Bell actually wrote about it in his journal.
That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably headlights for a car, though, like people say, you know.
Well, like they are very similar to the Paulding Lights. And if you remember me doing that story, they're basically just like ghost lights people see on Brown Mountain that no one can explain. And some, just like the Paulding Lights, claim to have proven that they are just the lights of reflected cars and trains, like those lights. But others claim that the lights are lanterns held by the ghosts of Cherokee maidens searching for their dead loved ones, because Brown Mountain was the site of a huge Native American battle. And then other people just, you know, claim UFOs. But whatever they were, the Bell saw them. So I think we can rule out car lights.
Yeah. I'm going to say they didn't have any Ford Broncos back then.
They didn't?
So, no.
Damn.
You know OJ invented the Ford Bronco?
He created it. All right. So once the family settled in Red River community in Tennessee, John Bell acquired some more land and he built a house. So while living in Tennessee, Lucy had four more kids, but sadly one passed away. So total, she had eight kids. So six out of eight were still alive.
Okay. That's so pretty decent.
It's pretty damn good for, I mean, 1800s.
Yeah.
Especially when, I mean, people were dying from like a paper cut.
Yeah. Like they didn't know germ theory back then. So they're like, oh, you have a cut? Just rub some actual shit in it. It'll make it better.
Right. And John Bell was one of the wealthiest men in the community. And he soon became one of the most influential. He became an elder of the Red River Baptist Church and was held in high regard for his integrity, his devout Christian beliefs, and his gracious hospitality.
He also had a barbed wire tattoo on his arm, and everyone thought it was really cool, so they just, like, let him be an elder.
And nobody messed with him because that meant he was tough.
That's right.
John didn't have any enemies in the community, really, except for one.
Dun, dun, dun.
And now this story is often disputed amongst Bellwitch historians. So I'll give you the rundown, but I'll also give you the side of things that actually probably really did happen after.
Okay.
So like this story's like really fun, so we're going to talk about it, but the chances of it actually being true are like kind of slim.
Okay. You tell me the story and I'm going to decide whether or not it was true.
But like, I mean, just the story being told over and over and over. It's like that game of telephone too. It's like stuff gets, you know, diluted. Okay, so the story goes that the one person who hated John Bell was a woman.
Surprise.
And his neighbor named Kate Batts. And Kate was a feisty 40-year-old woman. She had flaming red hair, just a firecracker, if you will. And people described Kate as being round and stout.
Oh, that's so
mean. She was a really sturdy woman, we'll say.
One time, my grandma called me sturdy. She's like, thank
That's
you.
That's not a compliment.
Thank you. Is it because I have good abs? Thank you.
Well, I mean, maybe you had buys as thick as a young man's thighs.
Thick thighs.
Because that's what people said Kate had.
Really?
Yes.
They said she had biceps as thick as a young man's thighs.
There's a reason for this, though, okay?
I love her. I'm in love with her.
She's kind of a girl boss. Like, well, I'll just preface it with that. There's girl boss energy coming from Kate.
I love her.
Kate was what you would call the man of the house.
Okay.
Because her husband, Frederick, had his legs crushed by a fallen tree. And Kate had no other choice but to take control and to take on his work to keep their farm going. Like I said, a real girl boss moment, if
Hell
you will.
Hell yeah, Kate.
So not only was Kate built like an ox.
That's terrible.
She took zero shit from anyone, especially after her husband's accident.
I heard she crushed a man's head in between her thighs once and he died. I don't know.
We could put this in this rumor because no one knows if anything's true. So
tell everyone.
Yeah. So basically Kate like took on the work of what the male should do on the farm. So she was like, I'm just as good as the men, you know, like.
Yeah. She just got like yoked, like straight up like bodybuilder status.
She was the man of her farm. So she was just like, all right, I'm going to lean into this super hard.
Yeah. People probably hated that.
Oh,
just because she was like doing a man's role. And also historically, people hate women with red hair. It's just like a thing.
They do.
Like in history. I mean, now we like it. But like, you know, I mean.
I know. It was like devil woman.
Yeah.
Flaming red hair. Kate had two sons who were basically useless weirdos. And not the good kind of weirdo, like I would consider us weirdos. They were just like, didn't do anything.
Okay.
They were named Jack and Calvin, and people described them as lanky and awkward. And they just sort of like kept to themselves. Okay. So like you would think
if your husband, I don't know, got his legs crushed in a falling tree accident and then, like, you had to, like, take on the work, you would think, like, maybe your sons would, like, step up for that, like, back in those days, you know?
Yeah. They were more of, like, indoor cats, though.
Yeah.
Not, like, farm cats.
So they basically didn't do anything, and Kate was like, well, fuck, I guess I will take care of the farm.
And
she did.
I love that for her, though. She's a strong, independent woman with thighs the size of a boy's thighs. Is that what it was?
A young man's thigh. Kate had one daughter named Mary, and Mary was like the golden child. She was beautiful and smart, and she left home as soon as she could get away from her strange ass family. Because, like, while Kate is, like, a girl boss, she's also kind of also a weirdo. Like, they're just odd. They're just an odd family.
Yeah.
With Kate having to take charge of her household and it being a man's world, she was always suspicious of being taken advantage of by men. So, like, in any type of deal. I mean, and as she should be.
Yeah.
Because men today are still intimidated by strong women. I can't even imagine how scared they were of her then.
Yeah. Like, literally, I just went to get, like, I just went to a mechanic and I got, like, misogynied because I'm a woman.
Misogynied.
Like, there's no rest for us.
No. So because of Kate's paranoia and the fact that she never bowed down to any man and she had her own opinions, this gave her a reputation of being a witch. Because, right. I mean, that's what they called women if you just, like, didn't obey men, you were a witch.
Like, if you broke social norms and, like, had massive cool biceps that everyone right. was jealous of.
Yeah, it's the breaking of social norms that, like, really people are like, oh, she's just a witch.
That, like, literally gets women in trouble all of the time still.
But thankfully for her, America was sort of over the whole burn at the stake thing. So
oh, yeah, they just got over that whole.
They got over that. That was, like, over 100 years ago, like, the Dark Ages.
Sure.
So instead of being prosecuted for this and hanged or burned at the stake, she was mostly just feared, which I'm sure she reveled in. Because, I mean, I would.
Yeah, absolutely.
And while there is no evidence that Kate was, in fact, a witch, she wasn't, like, not a witch.
Okay.
I mean, she did some weird things that freaked the townspeople out. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
And who knows, maybe she did it to lean into her reputation, like Taylor Swift style, you know?
Okay, so this one is like Kate's version.
Yeah, this is like Kate's version. It's her witch era.
I love that for her, honestly. You know? She's living her folklore dream.
So she did this thing where she would beg the women in the community for a brass pin. And no one knew why, but according to folklore at the time, if a witch collected a brass pin from a woman, she would be able to control the woman who gave it to her.
Whoa.
So, like, this was just kind of like a folklore-y, like, I don't know, rumor. I've never heard of it. Honestly, somebody in the town could have just, like, made it up and then it was, like, a thing.
Right.
And no one knows why she was asking for, like, women's brass pins. So it was also kind of a weird thing where they were just like, she's a witch.
Yeah, probably just, like, to be scary.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. She would also make up her own words.
Okay.
Like, I'm not sure if this was because she was uneducated. I'm thinking probably. And she just, like, truly didn't know what she was trying to say. Or maybe she was trying to seem smarter and more put together, like, in front of the men. Who knows for her reasoning for doing this. But it was just, like, another odd thing that she did.
Do we happen to have an example of any of
these? I don't have an example now.
What if they were real words, but everyone else didn't know? She, like, kept saying indubitably, and people were like, what the fuck is this bitch saying?
I think it was, like, words where it sounded like the word it was supposed to be.
Oh,
so
no.
She was, like, halfway there. Like, if she was, God, what was that? We were just watching a reality show where the guy said something. It was, like, malevolent or something, or malicious or something, and he was trying to say malicious, but he said, like, something else.
Yeah,
and we were like, that's not,
he was like malnicious.
Yeah, yeah. It's like malnicious, that's what she would do. So it'd be like things with that, she'd be like, that's so malnicious.
Yeah,
and people would be like, that's not But yeah, so she was just kind of like an odd bird, which is also why people called her a witch.
I like her style, honestly. She sounds cool.
Yeah, right? Another common thing that was blamed on a witch at the time was when a farmer's butter would spoil. So apparently this was a thing that witches loved to do. Okay. And let's be honest, no one gives a shit about your butter, Jebediah. You probably just didn't store it correctly.
Yeah, 100%. It is dairy and it just went bad because right. It's dairy sitting out at room temperature yeah. in the summer in Tennessee.
Yes.
Yes. They just 100%. That is what this is.
But men couldn't be held accountable for actually like doing anything wrong. So they would just blame it on a witch.
Oh, fucking Jebediah. I'm over his ass, dude.
Literally Jebediah. But anyways, there was one incident with Kate and a young girl who was churning butter. So this girl is churning butter and she's churning and she's churning for hours and no butter ever formed. So naturally, she blamed Kate instead of just being like, oh, maybe I'm just a shitty butter churner.
Right. Or like, maybe this milk doesn't have enough fat in it because our cows are malnourished. Right. There are literally so many things that could yeah. have led to this event.
Mm-hmm.
And they just all pointed at Kate, and Jebediah's yeah. like, I saw her do it.
I saw it with my own eyes.
My own eyes.
So to prove that it was Kate, this girl comes up with this brilliant idea. She puts an iron poker in the fire, and she waits till it gets hot. And then she puts the hot iron in the butter churner. And then when she does that, it curdles the milk. So she then goes to Kate's house. She knocks on Kate's door, and Kate opens the door, and Kate has her hand wrapped up, and her hand is burnt. So she believed that that was proof that Kate was, in fact, responsible for her lack of butter making, because she believed that when she put the hot iron in the butter, she effectively burnt Kate's hand, which was somehow involved and, like, prevented her from making butter. Like, Kate actually had, like, ghost hands in her butter, like making it so she couldn't churn. And then when yeah. she put the hot iron in, like, she claimed that that was proof. And Kate was like, no, I literally just like burned my hand pulling bread out of the oven or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this was apparently proof.
This was like science back then, though. Like the witch cakes were like you would piss in like a cake batter and like yeah. bake it and then feed it to your dog. And somehow that got rid of witches. Like, this is, like, very, like, people definitely thought this was 100% right. scientific fact.
And wasn't it like, oh, witches don't float, so if you throw them in water, they're going to sink and drown. And it's like, well, yeah, if you throw a person who doesn't know how to swim in water, they're going to sink and drown.
No, witches do float.
Oh, they do
so
float.
If you put a human woman in the water and she drowns, she wasn't a witch.
And then you're just like, oops.
But if she is a witch, she flies away. And it's like, what?
Don't you so think you're, yeah.
You're either killing an innocent person or you're releasing a witch that you just tried yeah. to kill. The logic just isn't there.
There's no logic.
No.
There is no logic.
Jebediah's like, I see her with her hand in the butter.
So the reason why John and Kate disliked each other is, like I said, unknown. But the most popular theory is that there was some sort of land dispute that caused the two to become enemies. So one story is that when Kate's husband, Frederick, had his legs crushed, John knew that she was probably struggling with one less set of hands on the farm. So he went to Kate and he tried to make a deal with her. He would offer her money for a portion of her land that she wasn't using. And Kate and John negotiated details, and they came to an agreement that John would give Kate one of his slaves because, like I said, she also owned slaves. So he would give her one of his own, and then he would give her a cash loan for the land.
Okay, so he's shark tanking her.
Yes.
And giving her a human being
mm-hmm.
for use of her land.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So in the bill of sale, he's also giving her a cash loan.
Okay, so he's giving her money
mm-hmm.
for use of the land.
Mm-hmm.
How is that a loan and not just rent?
It's a loan. I don't know.
All right. Well, I'm sorry.
It's a loan.
Yeah.
So in the bill of sale, so I think maybe he might have bought the land and then also loaned her cash.
Okay. All right.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
But in the bill of sale, John didn't write down a specific interest rate for this cash loan. So when it came time for Kate to pay off her bill, she was hit with an insane interest rate, like student loan style.
What?
Yeah. And like, I wonder why she's so paranoid about doing business with men.
Right, dude? You know? He's taking serious advantage of her.
Yeah.
She's paying him money.
Mm-hmm.
He's using her land.
Yeah, he didn't disclose what the interest rate would be. And then he, like, they signed the agreement. And then he was like, oh, yeah, by the way. So, like, she basically could, like, never pay it off.
That's such bullshit, dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, student loan style.
Yeah. So, like I said before, though, Kate did not go down without a fight. She did not put up with bullshit at all. So she shamed John publicly for his deceptive ways. And she like full on tormented him for 5 years. Like, she was not giving up. She was like, listen, motherfucker, you are not gonna get the jump on me.
I love that energy, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cersei Lannister style, like mm-hmm. make him walk through the streets and ring a bell yes. and scream shame.
Yeah, because I mean, at the time, too, like it was, I mean, it's still fucked up. But at the time, it was like especially fucked up. And I'm not sure exactly what she did, but I think it involved a lot of shit talking and public shaming for, I mean, just doing her dirty.
I mean, he deserves it.
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. So part of this, she tarnished his respected, like respectable, honorable man reputation, as she should, because he's not the person that everyone thinks that he is if he's doing this shit.
No, he's not acting like a respectable man.
No.
So he doesn't deserve to be treated exactly. like one.
And this whole situation eventually led to John being excommunicated from his own church. The one he was an elder at.
You know, actually been thinking about it, John, and your barbed wire tattoo is not that cool. So we're going to need you to leave.
Honestly, it's kind of trashy. So the reason that they excommunicated him was usury and coveting his neighbor's land. And this was in 1822. So this kind of happens like after our story finishes.
Okay.
But it's worth mentioning because you're probably asking yourself, like, a woman beating a man in a dispute in the 1800s? Unheard of.
I dare say.
Shocking. But I'll have you remember, a long, long time ago, our country hated taxes.
Yeah, we did.
And hated being taken advantage of by a government entity. No taxation without representation. It's basically what our country was founded on.
Yes, like freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
So usury was a high crime at the time because of this. And to think now we just accept the fact that we are insanely taxed and interest rates are set up so we can never pay them off. If the founding fathers could see us now.
They would ask why we didn't own slaves still. they would ask how women are wearing pants.
It's true.
But they would hate the taxes.
They would hate the taxes.
That's true.
They would hate them.
It's the only thing that they wouldn't.
Some people also believe that the events of the haunting also played a part in his excommunication because this happened after the events of the haunting, and the church was kind of, like, sick of it, like, sick of his shit.
Okay. I'm so excited to, like, find out what happens to this stupid man.
Another source says that Kate actually took up this matter with a court of law, and so she, like, went to a judge and was like, listen, this is bullshit. This guy is charging me this insane amount, and that in court, they convicted him of usury and of charging excessive interest. And John was an elder at the church, and because he was convicted of this, like, it kind of embarrassed them.
Yeah,
so they were
sense.
Just like, we're out. We can't have you. This is, like, too much, like, public, like, publicity. Like, mm-hmm. you can't be involved with us because you're a terrible person.
I think that's still pretty crazy, though, that, like, she was able to fight this man on it.
Yeah, and win.
I wonder if she's, like, kind of appealed to people because, like, her husband was injured and mm-hmm. like, you know, they're just taking advantage of, like, and her sons are losers, so they're probably like, poor Kate, man, like, she's got it rough,
right? But also, continuing with this theory, John and Kate also had a very public conflict in church, and that, like, this conflict seemed to be the kicking off point for all of the paranormal things that started to happen to the family. So everything started to seemed to start right after Kate sort of, I guess, publicly put a curse on the family. So even though the rest of the community labeled Kate as a witch, she was a very devout Christian, and she never missed a Sunday at church. She never missed, but she always arrived late, showing up halfway through the service every time.
Sounds like me.
When Kate did arrive, however, she seemed to try to, like, prove her faith by singing really loud and, like, saying amen the loudest, which was, like, kind of strange. But I guess she wanted to, like, show the reverend, like, hey, I'm here, by the way. And, like, if you didn't see me walk in, like, I'm here now.
Yeah, right. Like, she wanted her presence to be known. Yeah,
it was kind of obnoxious, though. So one Sunday, the entire community was attending a sermon, as they always did. And in the middle of the service, a man named Joe Edwards was feeling kind of spicy.
Okay.
And he decided that he just needed to get something off of his chest. So in the middle of the service, he stood up and he just started to repent. Okay. And I guess Joe loved drama, too, because he got on all fours and he started screaming about all of the sins that he had committed. And he was just like begging for forgiveness, like in the middle of church.
All right, that's fine and normal.
Yeah. All the while, everyone else is just like forming a circle around him, like, okay, Joe, relax. Like, we'll pray with you. Just stop screaming, okay? So in walks Kate Batts, fashionably late to the party as per usual. And Kate's like, what the fuck is happening here? So she breaks through the circle of people and she tries to get she tries to get in control of the situation. So she makes her way to Joe. And she plops herself right on Joe's chest, and she just starts screaming with him.
Oh, okay. So we're getting like a little midsummer thing happening.
Kind of midsummer, yeah. I guess she thought she was helping him get the demons out. Not sure. But like I said, she was a very large woman. So she actually was like suffocating him with her ass.
What a way to die.
Unintentionally.
I'm sure Joe loved it.
So the congregation is watching all of this. And they're like, you need to get up. Like, you're killing him. And she's like, no, no, no. Like, I'm helping him get closer to the Lord. Like, relax, guys.
I think I know what I'm doing.
Right. And the entire situation was ridiculous. And many people thought it was hilarious and just couldn't stop laughing. John Bell, however, was offended and thought that her actions were making a mockery of poor Joe and his attempt at repentance. So the two of them get into it, John and Kate.
John Bell sounds like a fucking party pooper.
Stay in your fucking lane, John.
He sounds terrible. I'm not going to lie. He's an energy vampire. He's bringing everyone else down.
So John called Kate a lying witch in front of everyone. And this was something that Kate was very offended by. So instead of denying this fact, though, she leaned into it once again.
Commit to the bit, Kate.
And oh boy, did she lean in. Because Kate responded back to John with a fucking curse in front of everyone in church. Zero fucks given.
Slay.
She was just like, oh, which am I? Then I curse you and your whole family, John Bell. And it was kind of a baller move. Like, everyone was like, oh, what the fuck is happening?
Fuck.
And most people didn't really take it seriously because they were still laughing at Joe, like, being crushed by her. Like, some people heard it, and John Bell definitely heard it. So now he's got it in his head that this witch has cursed him. And things at this point were just basically chaos. So the reverend finally had to step in, and he tells everyone, like, that's enough church for one day. Everyone just go home.
Hey, guys, Jesus just texted me. He said everyone has to go home now. We're done. Stop sitting on people. Stop cursing people. Right. John, I don't know, man. Take the stick out of your ass. Like, let's all go.
Right. So after this occasion is when the haunting started with the Bell family. But many accounts claim that this dispute between Kate and John simply never happened. Some say that the dispute happened between Benjamin Batts, not Kate. Benjamin Batts was the brother of Kate's husband, Frederick Batts.
Oh.
So some, like, historians, the Bell Witch historians, will tell you that Kate wasn't involved at all. It was Benjamin Batts, and he had an issue with John. And, like, this whole story is just, like, something someone made up to try to like lean into the witch theory.
Yeah, because like she was like a strange woman and like an easy target. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they had some sort of conflict and then like things escalated between Benjamin and John.
Yeah.
And then John was like, oh no, it was her. Like, she's the driving force behind this. She's mm-hmm. a woman and she has giant biceps.
Right.
We can't trust her.
But they do agree that the Bats family mm-hmm. knew the Bells.
Okay.
Because some records show that Kate Batts was the niece of Lucy Bell.
No shit.
She was the daughter of John Williams, Lucy's brother.
Oh.
And that Kate's husband, Frederick, some records show that he had another brother who was married to Lucy's sister. So they're very, both families are very intertwined. Yeah. Chances of them having interactions with each other are like very high.
Yeah, like just family drama.
Yeah, family drama. Not sure why. I mean, Kate probably got, we'll get into that later, but there could have been drama. This whole story, though, we're not sure if it's true. And when we come into explanations, I really don't think Kate had anything to do with it.
Right.
And like I'm said, like I said, like this story, we don't even know if it's actually true.
I'd like to think that she did curse him, though, because that's a fucking bomb-ass move.
That would be pretty funny. So the Bell Witch hauntings mainly targeted two specific members of the Bell family, John Bell and his 12-year-old daughter, Betsy Bell. And the Bell Witch was actually very fond of John's wife, Lucy Bell. The entity loved Lucy.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, if Kate was behind this and it loved Lucy, mm-hmm. I mean, that's her family. It's her kin right there.
That's true. That is very true. It's also important to note that these hauntings seemed to be right around the time that Betsy was going through puberty.
Menarche.
Which we know in other cases, I think the Black Monk of Pontefract mm-hmm. was one.
Yep.
That when a child is going through hormonal changes, that can sometimes cause poltergeist activity.
Yes, specifically when a girl gets her first period,
mm-hmm.
that like tends to spark poltergeist
activity. Yeah, it's like charges it. I don't know. It's weird. So the hauntings began one day in 1817 when John Bell was outside inspecting his cornfields. He came across a giant animal standing in his field. The large creature had the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit, and its eyes were glowing green.
Sure, John.
So John just stared at the strange creature for a few moments, and then he takes out his gun and he shoots it into the air to scare it off. And once he does that, the creature just vanishes into thin air. And this would be the first documented manifestation of the entity.
Ooh, do we see the bunny dog more?
We do.
Ooh, but you know what? I want a bunny puppy. How bunny cute dog. Would that be?
It'd be really cute.
So cute.
That night at dinner, the family was seated at the table when they started to hear beating sounds coming from the outside of their log cabin. Kind of as if like somebody were like knocking on the walls.
Okay.
The pounding got louder and faster, and their first thought was that Crazy Kate Batts had sent her slaves to their home to mess with them because she was their neighbor. But when they went outside to check, there wasn't a soul in sight.
It's just like some dude jacking off outside their house and like hitting the wall every time. And that's why it gets faster and then stops.
The family continued to see strange animals on their property from that point. Like giant animals that were just kind of unsettling. Like they knew what they were supposed to be, but there was just something about them. Almost like each creature was a version of not deer.
Oh, okay.
Like it was like you're like, oh, that's an eagle. And you're like, but wait, that's not how it's supposed to look.
And then you look closer and it has the face of Nicolas Cage and it's shouting at you about the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly. Like, let's steal it. And you're like, what?
Yeah. And then you, like, look again, and it's just an eagle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, exactly like that.
Definitely happened.
Somebody wrote that in one of their journals. I can't remember who.
I see this historical document here. Something about maybe changing his face with someone else's face at some point. I don't know. It sounds crazy.
Yeah. So, like, at first you wouldn't think anything of it, but the more you looked at it, you were like, this is not right.
Right. Like, its legs are backwards or, like, something weird.
Yeah. So they spotted a giant bird. They spotted, they said it was like a turkey, but larger, and then it just flew away before they could really get a good look at it. And who knows, it could have been just like a turkey. We don't know.
With Nicolas Cage's face.
Which, yeah, like naturally. And one afternoon, two of the children, Drury Bell, Drury.
It's spelled D-R-E.
It's Drury.
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 Drury Bell and Betsy Bell said they spotted an old strange woman in the apple orchard who seemed to disappear when they looked back. Betsy and Joel and Richard Bell were walking the property one day when they felt as if all of the energy had been drained from their bodies. And then a dark rain cloud started to form above them. And from a distance, they could see something green in a tree.
Okay.
So when the children got closer to the tree to inspect what it was, they saw that the green that they had seen was a dress. And they saw that a dark-haired woman was wearing the dress and hanging from the tree by a noose.
Oh, shit.
And this dark-haired woman, like, she seems to be the apparition that they see a lot alongside with these, like, random animals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's really the only, like, apparition that is mentioned.
Wow.
Which I think is also why they think it's a witch.
Yeah.
Like, she's, like, witchy.
A dark-haired woman in a green dress hanging by a tree, by a noose. That's crazy. That would freak me out.
But they don't see it. I mean, it's mostly mostly just a voice. They don't. They're not seeing like a ton of apparitions.
Yeah, and then like she slowly turns around. She has the face of Nicolas Cage.
She didn't have the face of Nicolas Cage. Unfortunately,
they didn't know who that was at the time.
They didn't. So it could have been. Yeah. We don't know. But they did turn her around, and she had fresh tears running down her cheeks.
Oh shit.
So they're terrified, and they ran away. And when they look back, the woman was just gone. Around Christmas of 1817, activity started to migrate from outside of the house to inside of the house. So first, it's just like a bunch of like knocking noises and like snarling sounds and stuff that they hear outside. But when they go out there, nothing's there. So now the sounds are happening inside the house. And they continued to hear the loud knocking sounds. And this would usually happen between 10 p.m. and 12 a.m., these sounds. Then things started to get worse. And the banging noises were so bad that they were waking the children up in the middle of the night. And then they started to hear the sound of rats gnawing at their bedposts.
Oh, gross.
But obviously when they looked down, there was nothing there. They tried searching for the noise, and the noise would just simply move rooms. So it was almost like it was trying to stay away from them and, like, keep them looking.
Yeah, like you can't catch me.
Yeah. And they would hear the noise of smacking lips and what sounded like someone being strangled with just, like, no rhyme or reason why.
Oh, okay.
So first the noises only happened from 10 a.m., from 10 to 12 a.m. And then they started happening from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. So basically all night.
Oh, my God.
The banging continued, but also sounds of a loud thunderstorm would happen, but it would be completely calm outside.
That sounds actually soothing, though.
I know, right? I'd rather have that than smacking lips.
You hear this when you're sleeping? You're going to wear that? Mm-mm. Mm-mm. What? Oh, okay. Is that... Mm-hmm.
They would hear the sounds of ghost chains, flapping ducks, dog fights. They would hear all of these sounds inside of the house as if it were like right happening right next to them. And in 1818, things escalated and the entity started getting physical with the family. The kids would have their bed sheets ripped off of them at night and pillows would be thrown to the floor. Then in October of 1818, the entity started attacking Betsy specifically. One night, she was yanked out of her bed by her hair, and when she struggled to get away, she was hit in the face. And it seemed like the more she tried to get away, it's just the more the entity would just, like, beat her.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Yeah. Her brother Richard was also yanked from his bed. And in the commotion, John Bell rushed to his children's aid. And he was able to free Betsy from this invisible force that seemed to be just, like, beating the shit out of her.
Poor Betsy, dude.
Yeah. She gets the brunt of it, for sure. So he helps her back into bed. But as he's about to leave, Betsy starts screaming, and he turns around, and she's just bleeding from her ears.
Oh, no, that's really bad.
Yes.
That's like a brain hemorrhaging.
Yes.
Okay.
John Bell and his family were desperate for help, and the one place he sought that he thought he could seek help was the church. So John went to his good friend and neighbor, Reverend James Johnston, who was not the reverend of the church he attended. He was just another reverend who lived nearby. And in order to figure out what they were dealing with, James and his wife decided to spend the night at the Bell cabin. And things started out normal, peaceful even. But when it was time for bed, the noises started. And by this time, the entity had grown a voice. Whispers were heard, but just super faint, and it just sounded like a feeble old woman singing hymns.
Okay, two things. I'm picturing the Warrens, mm-hmm. basically. Like, that's what's happening in my head. These two, James Johnson and his wife. And then also, imagine you're, like, laying in bed, and it's 1818, and you're sleeping. And then all of a sudden, you hear in your ear, bop it, pull it,
twist it. Dun, 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 dun. So Reverend James Johnson performed a blessing of sorts on the house. So he read some Bible passages, he sang some Jesus songs, the whole shebang. But that didn't do anything, because later that night, James and his wife had their bed covers thrown off of them, and James was slapped in the face. And the Reverend jumped out of bed, lit a candle, and shouted, "In the name of the Lord, who are you and what do you want?" But the sound just moved to a different room.
Thou shalt not bop it!
Then Betsy, once again, was pulled by the hair, slapped 7 times, and thrown to the ground. And the Reverend was just like, "Oh, fuck."
Not great.
Not really sure what to do here. I thought the blessing would work, you know?
I think my mom's calling me. I should go.
He's like, this is some heavy shit. So he basically told John that he needed to tell the rest of the community. And he needed to tell the community that his family was being attacked by a demon.
But another person is seeing this, like a person outside of the family. So that mm-hmm. gives it a lot of, like, validity.
Yeah. So he's like, listen, like, you have a demon in your house. You need to tell the rest of the community because, like, there's an actual demon in your house. And his reasoning was that the community could, like, all come together with their faith.
Oh, yeah.
And help banish the evil from their community. Like, you know, in that scene in Practical Magic mm-hmm. where they need more women to help get the evil spirit out of Jillian.
Strength in numbers.
It's kind of like that, but with Jesus. So that was, like, his thought process.
Okay.
Like, the more people that know, the more people can pray for you. And, like, maybe that'll work.
I mean, it makes sense if a whole community of people are, you know, mm-hmm. combining their thoughts into some sort of...
Right.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
So the word was spread, and some people believed it, while others were just like, this is bullshit. Like, this isn't real. And actually, the reverend of John's church didn't believe it at all. But some believed that it was because he was pissed that John hadn't gone to him first. Like, he had gone to his other friend who was a reverend.
That is strange. And part of me wonders, I'm just gonna put out my little skeptic card here, mm-hmm. putting on my skeptic hat. Part of me wonders if all of this isn't just completely fucking fake and made up by John, which is why he called his friend who's a reverend, you know, instead of, like, his church leader. Because at this point, he's still in the church.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that reverend was also his neighbor. So he was nearby.
Oh, okay.
So I think
so proximity makes sense.
Yeah,
then.
That was why he just kind of called him. But the other reverend felt kind of, like, burned by this. Mm-hmm. So when he heard of the news, he was just like, no, like, they're lying. It's just Kate Batts messing with them. And he told everyone that he thought that Kate had hired her slaves to drill holes in the roof and that they were using a string and hooks to pull the covers off. Okay. And that's how they were, like, making this happen.
I mean, clever, if true.
He claimed that they were also using pea shooters to produce the slapping effect on Betsy.
Mm.
Like, they were just shooting them through a window. And, like, a pea shooter is just, like, an old-timey BB gun. Like, but you just, like, it's like a straw and you just, like, blow peas out of it.
But, like, they would find, like, little things that this girl was being shot with all over the room.
And, like, a slap is different than you getting, like...
Hit with a BB.
Hit with a
tiny
pea.
Rock. Yeah.
So, to test this theory, they went to the house and they looked for holes on the roof, and they found none. And also, Betsy was getting thrown around, so that's really not something a pea shooter can, like reproduce, you know?
No, it's like a pee in a straw and you just like use your breath to blow it.
And at this time, Betsy was now 13 years old. And if you remember, her mother was 12 when she married her dad. So it was around the time that she was supposed to be courted by a gentleman double her age.
I am going to, once again, vomit.
And more than double her age, he was. He was a 31-year-old teacher named Richard Powell. And some say that he rented a room in the Bell cabin, but that hasn't been proven. It's just kind of rumor. He did, however, have a small schoolhouse a few yards east of the Bell property line, and he taught several of the Bell children. So I couldn't specifically found if he was Betsy's teacher.
Yeah. I'm going to say yes, because there was probably exactly one teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, if all of the rest, and I don't know if girls went to school.
Oh, that's a good question.
So I don't know if it was, like, her brothers. It just said taught several of their children. So
I'm
not sure.
I don't know if they would go to school.
Either way, I mean, he's a creep anyways, but if he's her teacher also, double creep.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he was also a friend of John and Lucy Bell. So I think it's safe that we can call him a groomer.
Oh, yeah. Like, he saw her as, like, a two-year-old and was like, I'm going to marry that one.
Yeah. And as Betsy got... As Betsy got older, meaning 13...
Old lady.
He developed a fondness for her, and he paid her many compliments. But Betsy had her eyes set on another boy.
An actual boy?
A boy who was way closer to her age. He was 18 years old, and his name was Joshua Gardner.
I'll take it. 18 is still, there's a one in front of that. That's fucking insane.
So both the Bells and the Gardners were pleased with this courtship, but the witch had other plans. For reasons unknown, the entity hated their courtship and was very strongly against it, and it wanted Betsy to marry Richard Powell. And Richard wanted to court Betsy, even though he witnessed the haunting for himself. One day he was over visiting when they heard Betsy scream, and they rushed to her room and they found her in her nightgown covering her face because she was just being repeatedly slapped.
And he's like, I can fix her.
Yeah, basically. And then he heard the sound of someone hocking a loogie, and then like all of the candles went out and it was just followed by wicked laughter. But Betsy got attacked no matter where she went. The witch followed her. One night she spent the night at her friend's house and the entity followed her and once again attacked her. So she has like no peace.
That really sucks. But I have, I don't know. I'm going to reveal what I'm thinking at the end of this episode because I feel like something else is happening here.
I might tell you if you're right.
Okay.
So word started to spread about the Bells' paranormal events happening, and the family decided that they needed to do something. So they decided to start communicating with the spirit. They thought that if they could figure out what it wanted and what it was, that they could help make it go away. And before this, the entity really wasn't speaking to them at all. It was making the noises and, like, the loogie sounds and the groaning and the lip smacking and the, like, very faint whispers. But it wasn't forming full-on words yet. So the family decides to try to communicate with the spirit via knocks.
Yeah, this is, like, a huge, like, spiritualism movement thing. Like, you one knock yes, two knocks no. Yeah, totally.
So they're doing that, and then they start asking it, like, actual questions. So they ask how many rooms are in the house, and it responds correctly. And then they ask how many people does the family own, and it responded correctly with 9. So they know that whatever they're dealing with here is intelligent.
Yeah, they're like, do you think I'm cute? Knock once for yes, knock two for no. And it goes, oh.
So since Richard Powell wanted to impress the family and try to steal Betsy away from Joshua, he basically inserted himself in the family's ghost drama.
I hate him.
Yeah. He came in trying to act all cool and smart since he was a school teacher. And he thought that if he started to speak Latin to it, maybe it would respond.
Loser.
How he knew how to do this, I'm not sure. Some reports say that he was also into the occult. Oh. So maybe he had some, like, info, you know?
I guess Bibles used to be written in Latin. It's, like, a very
right
religious text.
And I think at this point they thought it was a demon. maybe it's just because, like, the Bible, like, original OG was written in Latin. So he was like, all right, maybe if I try to speak in Latin, it'll communicate with us.
Yeah, like, that was, like, the original language of, like, the devil or whatever. So, right. Like, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. Whatever he did, though, worked. Because after he spoke Latin to the witch, it started fully speaking and answering the family.
Okay.
And this was right around 1819. And when it first started speaking, it sounded as if it were mocking Reverend James Johnston. So if you remember, James Johnston was the first person to really ever speak directly to the entity.
Right.
Remember, he came in, he tried to perform the blessing, and then... So the entity sounded as if it were trying to mock his voice.
Oh.
And it was saying, it was like mocking the Bible passages that he had read at the start when he was doing the blessing.
It's like doing it in pig Latin, though.
Right. It also referred to him as Old Sugar Mouth.
Ugh, what?
Yeah, just like calling like James Johnson, remember Old Sugar Mouth?
I would be so offended if someone called me Old Sugar Mouth.
You'll find that the entity gets... A huge sense of humor along the way. Like, it's actually really fun and kind of funny, though. So it just calls him Old Sugar Mouth for no reason at all. And so the family starts asking more and more questions. They asked who the spirit was and what it wanted, and it responded with, "I am the spirit of someone who was once happy and who has been disturbed." And for a while after that, things got quiet. Until Betsy had a friend come over and visit, and then the attacks came back in full force. Betsy was once again thrown from her bed, slapped around, and what felt like an invisible hand covering her mouth so tightly that she couldn't open her mouth. So it was just like she was being, like, held.
Yeah.
In March of 1819, things started to get really bad for Betsy. As if getting repeatedly yanked out of your bed from your hair and slapped wasn't enough, Betsy started to have seizures.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
And this was in the 1800s, so we can't be sure if there was an underlying medical condition or not. But there were no other reports that I could find that stated that once the haunting was over, the seizures continued. So I would say that they were probably related to the haunting.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like she was epileptic and they just, like, didn't know.
Right.
Some even suggested that the witch was trying to possess Betsy. She would faint and then she would wake up in a gasping fit until she passed out again. And then she would start having her seizure and her eyes would roll into the back of her head. And sometimes these fits would last for 20 to 40 minutes at a time.
That sounds exhausting. That poor girl.
And every time she had a fit... the witch would make its presence known. It was almost like it was gaining energy from her pain and her seizures. Because after each one of Betsy's fits, the witch would have some type of tea to spill about the people in the community.
Gossip.
So the witch loved gossip.
Okay, I love this.
And it was known to tell the secrets of many people in the community. Because the witch was also... or claimed to be a devout Christian.
Okay.
First, they believed it to be a demon, but so this was like before gaining a voice. But it made it known that it hated anyone who was deemed a bad Christian.
Okay.
So if you like missed church, like it would call people out for being a bad Christian.
This is a very judgmental spirit.
It is. It 100% is. And it would just air everyone's dirty laundry. And it was right about a lot of the things that it said.
XOXO, Bell Witch.
Exactly. You're not wrong. It would call out one person for being a bad Christian and missing church. And then would praise another person for never missing a day. It called Jesus the King of Kings. But it wasn't in a mocking way like how, you know, some demons, like they mock Christianity.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was truly a devout Christian, which was weird. And it made them think that whatever it was definitely not demonic in nature.
Yeah, like if it loved Jesus.
Right. Oh, and the ghost was also a huge racist.
I'm going to say most people at the time... were huge racists.
Yeah, everyone owned slaves. So at the time, everyone was.
Yeah, but, they were just enslaving people left and right.
So. But it made it known that it was not a fan of the slaves on the property, and it would shit talk them all of the time.
Come on, they don't deserve that.
Right.
What the hell?
They're like, yeah, like, we want to fucking be here too, bitch. Like, right? Okay.
Oh, fucking K.
And this is actually really fucked up. But sometimes the family would invite the slaves into their home as an attempt to try to scare the ghost away for a little bit because it hated black people.
That's...
which is super messed up.
Yeah, I get the logic.
You already own these people, and now you're trying to use them as a shield against an angry entity that you can't see.
That's not great.
It's not great at all.
No.
So to try to protect themselves, the enslaved people on the Bell Farm started doing things that would protect themselves from the evil.
Okay.
A man named Zeke started making witch balls to ward off the advances of the witch.
Okay, cool.
Except these weren't the cute, like, little witch balls we've seen with, like, crystals and herbs and, like, ribbons and shit.
Yeah, not the ones you can buy on Etsy.
No. These were full of foul-smelling things such as animal shit, blood, semen, spit, and other various disgusting things.
I feel like that would ward off a witch more than, like, a little potpourri sash with a ribbon on it.
Yeah, probably.
You know, that you can buy for $9.99 plus shipping.
Totally. And while the thought process was there, the witch balls didn't work. One man named Dean was also regarded, as John's strongest slave. He recounted a few run-ins with the witch. And in one instance, he was walking the property along the river when he spotted the black dog again.
Oh, the bunny dog?
Yeah, it was similar to the one John first saw at the start of the hauntings. They don't call out that it had the head of a rabbit, though. They just said it was like a giant black dog.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's the same or different. I don't know. This dog yelled at Dean for carrying a witch ball in an attempt to ward it off. And the witch ball that he was carrying then began to get bigger and bigger until it exploded into flames. And then the dog ran at Dean about to attack. Dean, however, was carrying an axe, for he was known for his precision with an axe. It was said that he could take one side of a tree against any two men on the other side and cut a deeper curve, whatever that means.
I think that's the little, like, notch that, like, they cut out to, like, make a tree fall down.
All right, well, he could do it better than two men, then, is what that saying means.
Axeman Dean.
So Dean brought the axe that he was carrying down onto the middle of the dog's head as hard as he could, splitting it in half before the dog could attack. Blood splattered everywhere, and then it just disappeared.
Whoa.
Just vanished.
Ghost dog.
And from that point on, the dog was often seen on the property, stalking Dean. However, it had grown another head where Dean had delivered the blow.
Whoa.
Yeah, weird. Dean also claimed to have been turned into a mule by the witch while he was looking for his axe. It apparently turned him into a mule and vowed to ride him to hell for breakfast.
Okay, it's not very filling, but yeah, you can do that for breakfast, I guess.
And in another incident, he was attacked by the creature that had the head of a rabbit in the body of a dog. And he had a scar on his head from the attack. And if people asked him about it, he would often tell it was from that old witch.
I want to know more about this mule thing. How long was this man a mule?
Unsure.
Just for breakfast, or did they do it for lunch, too?
I think all of this also came from journals.
Okay.
Like, I'm sure that if we had accounts from the slaves that lived on this property, mm-hmm. I'm sure this story would be way deeper and, like, more fucked up.
Yeah.
Because while, like, we only have the Bell family's account of it, really.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And, so like, while they got... I mean, the haunting wasn't great for them. I can only assume what it was for these poor people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm sure they probably got, like, double what the Bells were getting. Ugh. With the word spreading far and wide about the infamous Bell Witch, people in the community decided that they wanted to help. And one man in particular, named Frank Miles, thought he could come and save the day.
Well, you're laughing, so I'm excited.
This is also one of my favorite stories in this whole tale.
Okay.
So, yeah, just buckle up for this one.
Frankie boy.
So our guy Frank here was known as the strongest man in the area.
Do you think anyone ever called him Frank the Tank? Did he invent that?
I'm going to say he probably gave himself that title.
Yeah, but he said someone else did it, right?
Yeah. But anyways, he thought he could rid the family of their ghost by challenging it to a fight.
Of course. Obviously.
So Frank went to the Bell cabin and declared to the ghost, "If you want to beat someone up, fight me. Leave Betsy alone. She's only 13.
Chivalry.
To which the witch responded by hitting Betsy with so much force that she spun around.
Oh, fuck.
But Frank was determined, so he started to chase the ghost through the house. Okay. And remember, the ghost isn't an apparition. It's just a voice.
Bop it. Pull it. Exactly. Spin it.
So what would happen was that the ghost would laugh or say something in one corner of the room, and Frank would rush to that area and try to tackle the entity who was invisible.
Okay. I love this energy, though. So this is big golden retriever energy.
Totally, yeah. Totally. So he'd jump into the area with his arms outstretched and fall and crash into whatever was in that area trying to catch the ghost. And then the ghost would make another sound on the other side of the room, and Frank would run over there, crash into anything, and basically just like, so he was just like breaking everything in the Bell cabin. Okay. Like trying to catch this voice because he can't see it.
Like a literal like bull in a china shop.
Yes, exactly. I literally wrote that. Bull in a china shop.
Oh yeah.
He was trying to get his hands on the ghost. And like, am I painting this picture for you? Because
yes.
It's actually quite hilarious.
I don't know why I'm picturing like a Wreck-It Ralph style man, but yeah, he's like leaping.
Totally though.
Just ruining everything in the
house. Crashing into things. Mm-hmm. And Lucy Bell's like, can you stop breaking all of our furniture?
It is 1819 and we cannot just go to the store and buy this shit.
Like it took us 8 months to build this chair. It was our only chair.
That was the chair.
So finally it's nighttime and Frank decides to sleep over at the Bell cabin. So while he's laying in bed, the entity pinned Frank to the bed with his sheets, and it tightened the sheets around him so much that they tore in half. And the next morning, the family awoke to find Frank hiding and cowering under his bed. But Frank wasn't done yet.
Come on, Frank, be done.
Frank is a man with a plan, okay?
Okay.
So Frank goes home. And he comes back to the Bell property, but this time he's brought a giant bag of flour with him.
This is a Three Stooges bit.
I know.
He's going to throw flour on the ghost.
Yes. His plan was to throw the flour on the entity when he heard it make a sound so he could reveal where it was and then be able to catch it and fight it. Frank is not the brightest bulb in the tanning bed.
I do see.
You haven't guessed.
I see the logic, but I'm not sure ghosts work like that. Yeah. I do love this energy, though.
It's there.
He's a fixer.
He's trying
Frank.
To help.
He's doing his best.
So after breaking all of the things in the Bell house, Frank now comes in. Guns ablazing with his bag of flour, basically just covering the entire house in flour. And I'm sure you can guess that his flour plan did not work.
What? How did it not work?
So Lucy Bell's just like, yeah, can you get the hell out of my house? And he's just like, yeah.
Yeah, he broke everything.
Yeah.
Every single thing. And then dumped, I'm going to assume, 25 pounds of flour in this house.
Yes. And the witch was like taunting him the entire time. And then finally the witch is like laughing at him, kicks him in the butt and tells him that he was as dumb as a sack of turnips, which not wrong.
She's not wrong.
It's not wrong.
I'm sorry. It's not wrong.
They did discover something from Frank's madness, though. They found that the angrier Frank got while trying and failing to catch the witch, the more aggressive the witch got with Betsy, almost like it was feeding off of Frank's emotions. He would get angry and then the witch would get even angrier.
Yeah, like use his like energy mm-hmm. to beat the shit out of this little girl.
Yes. People from all around the country started visiting the Bell farm, trying to have an encounter with the infamous witch. Tourists started showing up like wildfire, and John Bell welcomed everyone who came.
Betsy's like, please, please, no.
He allowed people to pitch tents on his property, and he sometimes even allowed them to sleep in his own home. He was very hospitable, even providing food for the people who visited. And when the tourists tried to offer John money, he refused because his reasoning was that he didn't want to be profiting off of his family's misery.
That actually surprises me quite a bit because I could see him charging for this.
I mean, my point of view is like they're already miserable.
Yeah.
Why not make a dime, you know?
Like, yeah. Throw a dime Betsy's way.
I'd be like, can you just like maybe collect it for me? Because like I get punched in the face like daily.
All of my ribs and dolls are broken. Frank broke my dolls. The ghost broke my ribs. I'm still coughing up flour.
This poor girl. You guys want me to marry this 31-year-old man?
I'm not having fun.
I am straight up not having a good time right now. Several reverends visited the home, trying to rid it of its evil. None ever being successful. But one Reverend James Gunn.
What? James Gunn?
James Gunn. Was able to get some information out of the witch. So he came to the home and he declared outright that the witch didn't know what it was because every time someone asked it, it would give a different answer. To this, the witch replied, "I am nothing but old Kate Batt's witch, here to torment old Jack Bell to death." The witch sometimes called John Old Jack for reasons unknown.
Jack is a nickname for John.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
The fuck?
Isn't that weird? Because it's virtually the same name. I have no idea.
It's not the same name. Those are two different names.
I know, but it's like, it is. It's 100% a nickname. Jack is a nickname for John.
She gave him that nickname.
For some fucking reason.
And it's believed that that statement was what caused everyone to believe and also feed into the rumor that we know now that Kate Batts was the witch or had had something to do with it.
Because it said specifically,
I am Kate Batts' witch. Mm. And so everyone was like, oh, it's Kate Batts. It's Kate Batts. But, and I don't know what came first, if that story was even true or if that story was made up after this.
Yeah. Well, you know? Reverend James Gunn took that information and he wrote it down and he turned it into the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
But as stated earlier, like we don't know if that's even true. There's no proof. And historians believe that it was actually Benjamin Batts who had the fight with John in the first place.
That I feel like that tracks a little bit more.
But this is why the witch gained the nickname Kate or Old Kate or Kate Batts Witch. But it's important to note that the entity itself never confirmed a gender. In fact, it claimed to be several different people. And I think most people assumed it was female because they called it a witch.
Right.
And also it's like women were blamed for everything. So like, you know.
Yeah.
The Reverend asked the entity once more who it was. And this time it gave an interesting answer. It said, "I was one of the first white men to explore the region." But it also told him that it could prove this.
Okay.
It said that while it was alive, the spirit buried a large sum of gold nearby, and it gave instructions to where they could find this treasure.
Okay.
It said it was buried in a box on the property under a rock near the spring. It also gave strict instructions that it could only be found by three people: Drury Bell, his friend Alex Porter, and Reverend James Johnston.
How interesting.
But it also said that if they found the gold, all of it had to go to Betsy Bell.
And she was like, fucking finally.
She's like, yes, oh my God, please. So the three of them embarked on a journey to find the gold. And they found the rock, and they moved the rock, and they started digging. But they didn't find any gold. And when they returned to the home, the witch started cackling with delight and told them that it lied and it just played a prank on them and they were pissed.
Poor fucking Betsy, dude.
And Betsy's like, damn it. So from this point, the witch grows into it like a little comedian of sorts. It thought the prank was the funniest thing in the world, and it would recount the story of how it made these three idiots search for the treasure that wasn't there to any visitor that came. Like, it thought it was the funniest thing in the world. It was like, hey, you know what I did the other day? I made these three dummies go look for gold that doesn't exist.
What's the deal with treasure hunts?
Right. And the witch loved the attention from tourists. It would almost put on a show for the people who visited. But if you came to the home with the intent of trying to rid the ghost or bless the house, it would slap you and ridicule you in front of everyone for all to hear. So if you tried to mess with it, it was like not having that.
Okay.
If you came to the house as a skeptic and thought the entity was a prank put on by the Bell family, the witch would scream in your ear and make you hallucinate as punishment for not believing.
Oh.
So the witch at this point was, I mean, it was like, it was putting on a show for the people who were there. Like, it would do, like, yeah, comedy, it would tell jokes, it would, it loved having people come and visit it.
Yeah. All you know, showmen do. All the world's a stage.
It was a showman. Yes. And this was its greatest show.
Wow. Well, poor Betsy. Yeah, this little witch is like, I'm going to beat the shit out of John Bell until he dies. And Betsy's like, you're aiming wrong. You're aiming at me. Mm-hmm. Please hit my dad. Don't hit me.
She's like, everyone, please stop trying to fight it because it just hits me and not you. And like,
she's just trying to be a girl.
I'm 13.
She doesn't fucking need this shit right now.
She doesn't.
Okay.
And wow, that's where we're going to end for part one.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, this story has everything. I love this story so far. I'm very excited for the next one. So join us next week for the conclusion of the Bell Witch
story. It gets juicier too.
Juicier than this?
Wait, oh my God. The Bell Witch? We haven't even seen peak Bell Witch yet.
Really?
Yeah.
She's like ramping up.
It's ramping up. Yeah.
Slay. All right. Well, tune in next week for Two Bell, Two Witch.
Two Bell, Two Witch.
Yeah. All right. Should we?
We won't do a listener mail on this one because obviously it's a two-parter. We'll do it on the next one. But
yes,
if you want to send us a listener mail, you can actually just go on our website, quiteunusualpod.com. You can send it through there now, or you can send us an email at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com.
Yes. If you have ghost stories, witch stories, if you know anything about the Bell Witch, really anything you want to tell us, send it over and we will read it on the show. Also, if you would like to support our podcast, we do have a patreon.com. Mm-hmm. Well, why did I say it like that? We have a patreon.com. You can search for us. It's just Quite Unusual Pod at everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have a new patron that I would like to welcome.
Welcome, Cecilia F.
Welcome to our little coven.
Welcome to the coven.
All right, let's wrap this one up and we'll pick up next week.
And as always, remember to celebrate the strange
and keep it unusual.
Bye.